The Weekly Warp Pipe.
All right. What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Weekly Warp Pipe. I'm Russ Lyman.
I am Pac-Man Case. Just kidding. But he'll be here soon. I'm NES Addict.
You're the NES Addict. Yeah, I thought it'd be fun to have another guest on the show. Maybe we try to do, like I think we promised, we'll do one guest a month and one live stream a month. I think people kind of digging that. And I thought it'd be cool to have, yeah, Andy on Pac-Man Case and talk about running a game store, because he recently took over running a local store in your town, right, Jay?
Yeah, ever since he started, it's really went downhill, too. I'm just kidding.
I guess we'll bring him on to defend himself.
Ouch! My heart and soul is in this store, bro. I'm even wearing the hat.
No, Robert sent me pictures. So Robert is the owner and a good friend of mine as well. He sent me these really rad pictures that you guys have done some really cool stuff, but I'll obviously save that for you to talk about.
No, man, I appreciate it. Oh, by the way, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Yeah, I reached out to you. I was like, hopefully you can record when we do. It's a little bit late, and I know you got family stuff to do, but appreciate you having you on here.
Yeah, not gonna lie, I was pretty stoked when I found out you were jumping on here. So,
yay! I mean, I can run over to Jay's house right now.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. Even though Andy and I live in the same town, and like we had like these grandeur ideas of like we're gonna hang out every weekend. Like I might have seen Andy like twice in the last like 8 months.
Yeah, this was a really weird year just in general for a lot of things. My life changes, your life changes. Like, so I think we just have to find a rhythm again. That's it. Yeah. Yeah.
Sweet. Well, hey, you want to do a quick, I guess, introduction of yourself and
yes. Going on? My name is Andy Pac-Man Case. Why is it Pac-Man Case? It's a long story. Go watch my YouTube channel. I talk about why I called myself Pac-Man Case. I've done YouTube for, oh dear Lord, 5 years now. And lucky for me, I was reached out by our local video game store here in town and asked me if I wanted to GM that store. So that has now been my life the last 5 months, basically starting in October till now. God, it's probably going to be 6 months soon.
Yeah.
And that's what I do, man. Get some YouTube in there every now and again. But the Video Game Cavern is literally been, I want to say, Jay, you might know better than I just because you've lived here, but 23 years. I want to say they've been around for 23 years. They started in a flea market called the Jockey Lot. And they did that for a couple of years before they got so big they needed a brick and mortar. And then that store's been there for over 20 years now. Brick and mortar. And that's difficult in this day and age for stores anyway. So I'm proud to be part of it. And anything you guys want to know, I will be a bleeding heart for you. So
who is your favorite customer?
Oh, well, I mean, Jay hasn't come to see me other than one time. So it can't be Jay.
Wow.
I don't honestly, dude, there's so many different people that come into that shop. Like there's like a handful of like ones that we can like talk with, but a lot of times it's the people that are my same age. So like we grew up the exact same way, played the exact same games, those types of things too. But like we have a pretty awesome guy that comes in. He trades stuff with us almost like every week at least. And we have a good time. We were talking about X-Men recently too. So
nice.
Yeah, man. But I'm meeting the community, right? I'm trying to learn names and all that fun stuff right now.
Nice. Yeah. I figured I'd said we'll talk. I have people post questions, so we'll get to that a little bit later in the episode.
Nice.
But I figured it'd be fun because I also used to run Retro Games Plus in Orange, Connecticut. I was manager there for, probably maybe 4 or 5 years.
Oh, nice.
So I went to Costco, and the owner ended up moving out to California. So he has like a GM person running the 3 stores in Connecticut, and now Chris has the 2 stores in California.
Nice. So Russ has horror stories. He knows the retail horror stories.
I'll chime in as well as working at a game store. Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome.
Now, how many days a week are you there?
So right when we first started, it was a 5-day for everybody. And I actually changed those hours. So I turned it into a 4-day work week with 3 off and we all work 10s. But the reason we do that is because I have the crew come in 2 hours early so that they can get product out. So that would be, you know, making sure that our case is full of consoles, handhelds, various games and those types of things. And that's actually worked out really well for us because the store is so busy that doing that during the day is, it was becoming difficult. And if the case was empty, it looked like the store was empty. So,
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to say, we only had one person on in the morning, usually from 10 to like 2. And then the next person would come on. And then I'd probably leave by 3. And only on weekends, we would have two people on. But it usually was slow enough just to have one person on. But yeah, if you get like a trade-in then coming in and you're trying to manage customers and do the trade-in, it can certainly get tough.
No, it's what's wild, man, is this store thrives compared to other retro stores. So, I mean, I've heard that before, Russ, right? It's one shift labor all day. Mm-hmm. You know, you do the best that you can. Sometimes you had to shut the store down so you could eat lunch or something like that. We legitimately have six. We have 6 employees and 5 of them are full-timers. So the store itself sometimes will have 3 on the weekends when we can make it happen. And then 2 at least during the day, because the trades, they just don't stop. Like, it's literally all day, every day, trades getting thrown on the counter. And then while you're working on that trade, you have 5 or 6 customers needing help. And that's tough to juggle. My explanation to a customer too, because sometimes you have to wait, is I can't give you cash unless they give me cash to buy product. So if you don't mind waiting, and everyone kind of always understands that. But yeah, having that many people is pretty rare for a mom and pop shop, which is awesome.
Nice.
Yeah.
I don't know if Jay was going to remember.
No, I was just going to make the comment earlier because I've been coming to this store since like 2013, 2014, whenever I got back into retro video games, my buddy said, hey, you need to go to the video cavern on Wade Hampton. So I went up there and I remember like the first 3 games I bought, and my stupid camera just went out. Of course it did. So I'll just talk. You can just hear me until it comes back on. But basically I got the Punch Out, not the Mike Tyson version.
Okay.
Regular. I got Kung Fu and I got, was it Excite Bike?
Yeah, dude, you remember what you got the first time you went into that store?
Yes.
That's so awesome.
Jay's memory is pretty good.
Yeah,
I would say.
That's legit.
I guess it left an impression on me, I guess. Yeah. Like, because I was just so excited about getting back into Nintendo. And I just remember going up to that like little, it was a very similar to how you guys have the NES set up now, except it was on that back wall where that glass container is. And I just remember flipping through and being like, oh my God, because I had like a certain amount of money. I could spend like 20, 25 bucks. And, 10 years ago, they were a little bit cheaper. So I think I was getting things like $5 a piece.
Right.
But I just remember, I was like, I know this isn't Mike Tyson's Punch Out, but it's just the same. And it's going to be so amazing to hear it again. And I just remember going home and putting each of those games in is like, that Excite Bike. And it just I was addicted. It was like doing like drugs. I was like, oh my God, I want more.
Got your fix.
Anyway, all this to say, years and years of going to this store, I've become really good friends with a lot of people that's worked there. I love Robert. He is the owner now. I loved Robin, but I would get like special privileges, I would get to come in the back and stuff. Mm-hmm. And all that to say, Andy's talking about, getting there 2 hours early, get the product out. I feel like you guys have done a really good job of like moving some of this inventory that kind of just gets stuck in the back forever. And even Robert's office was like, it was a closet. Now it's an office.
Wire shelves and cardboard boxes and manuals stacked to the ceiling. It was wild. So that being cleared up. And then I will say there was some stuff that probably hadn't been touched in 10 years in the back of that store, including a Tekken arcade cabinet that had been sitting back there forever. And I finally pulled it out. We got it fixed. And now it's a customer cabinet that they can play while they wait for the trades.
That's so rad.
Yeah.
Nice.
Other big thing you did, the thing that I appreciate the most.
Wait, moving the Nintendo cabinet? The World of Nintendo? Oh, yeah. So for the longest time, the store had the World of Nintendo cabinet pushed up against the wall. And if you guys know that cabinet, on the back side of it is a giant World of Nintendo like logo. And it was just hiding. It was hiding for 20 years, man. And which is awesome because it was pristine. But we ended up switching that up and we made a handheld corner in the store. And now when you approach the window of the store, you get to see that giant Nintendo logo when you come up. So that's really cool. Because nice. Like before with the store, people knew that it was a video game store because they had came in before. But there was never anything on the windows indicating that at all. So gotcha. Now from the road, you can at least see something like that. But yeah.
And Andy, tell them what my first concern was when we talked about this the other day.
Oh, yeah. Jay's like, so listen, is this going to have sun damage? And I go, already taking care of it, man. We put a protector layer on the window, tint and UV protection so that there will not be an issue. And we lit it up from the back, too. So at night, you can see it, which is awesome.
That is like the best answer ever. Yeah. I know people in the comments are going to be like, it's going to get sun damage.
Right. Sun damage. Yep. Because I came across one of those, funny enough. We were driving to Virginia Beach for vacation, and we stopped at one of these like indoor flea markets, and I did a full video, and we were walking down these aisles, right? And then I see out of the corner of my eye that like pattern with like, you know, you see on the side. And so I came around, and it literally was the Nintendo cabinet. Like you could see it from the back. And when I came around, it was just like filled with like knickknacks, like some lady was using it to sell her knickknacks, and there was a little sticker that said cabinet not for sale. And I'm like, I bet you if I brought her another generic cabinet and offered her some money, we could swap these out.
Absolutely.
This is being wasted here. You're not even selling video games in it, you're selling knickknacks.
Exactly.
That's so sad to know that.
I mean, at least it's
I guess preserved.
Being preserved.
Right.
At some point, the least.
It's going to go somewhere.
Yeah. Likely. I mean, I've seen stuff, right? Like Facebook Marketplace back in the day, like just sitting out like in someone's backyard, or like, you know, the paneling on it is just like wet, or like all of these things that it's funny how much we didn't care about them in their present time. But now it's like a time capsule to grab that stuff. So, that when people come into the store, we always get the same reaction on their first time, is they're like, whoa, this store has a bunch of cool old shit, you know? Like, yeah, man, like, that's what we're about. So,
yeah. Now I'm trying to, it's just video games. Is there toys too or no?
No. So one thing our store has been really, really careful on is being retro video games only. We want to be the destination for video games for the collector, but also for the everyman. Like if you are just a gamer, we want you to feel comfortable to come in and shop the store. So we don't have tchotchkes. We don't have Pokemon cards. We don't have toys. It's not our expertise, and we only have about 600 square feet in the store to work with. So if video games is our bread and butter, then we'll just double down on that. So,
right. It's just like, you got to keep it real focused, which they do a good job of.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what would you, I'll pull out some questions.
Oh, sure, Russ. Yeah.
What would you say is the least like games traded in as for a system that you see?
Oh, the stuff that like never comes in?
Right.
100% Sega Genesis.
Really?
Yes, 100% Sega Genesis is the least amount of traded. And I don't know if it's an area thing, like the Southeast, there's not as much love for it, but maybe I have like two or three customers that come in and really enjoy Sega. Other than that, it is a Nintendo and a Pokemon store. Like that's what people come in asking for every single time. I would say 90% of the things that people are coming in is Switch and Wii and so forth. DS and handheld stuff too, right? With the Pokemon, the GBA. But Genesis, I was surprised because when I first started, I loved the Genesis and no one cared. I was like, oh, it made me so sad. That's the least. That would probably be what comes in.
I feel like 10 years ago, that came in a bit more.
Maybe, you know, I don't know, because with Genesis having the clamshell, you would think they'd be preserved better than the Super Nintendo stuff. But I don't see it. There's not a lot of them that come in. You know, obviously something like Sega Saturn, that type of stuff is pretty rare at any game store. So if I was going to be like truly honest and looking at metric numbers, it's probably in there, but it's still Sega.
Like maybe TurboGrafx.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, anything like that, right? A TurboGrafx or a Lynx or like, yeah, that type of stuff. Funny enough, man, I've seen more Virtual Boy in the last 2 months than I've seen ever. Somebody came in with, I want to say it was like 10 or 12 different ones. Some of them were boxed, some of them weren't. Jack Bros wasn't in there. But then also Robert found a great lot of like 14 or 15 of them recently too, that we ended up getting in the store. So we were squared up on Virtual Boy stuff for a long time because the console doesn't have a lot of games.
Right, like 14 or 15. Yeah. So Russ has the whole library.
Uh-huh. Who's got the whole set right here?
Hey, there you go.
I ended up, I had a Virtual Boy already in maybe 6 or 7 of the games. And then someone had posted in a Facebook group and I kind of messaged him and we went back and forth and he had a Virtual Boy in the box and all the games plus the manuals on them. And we were going back and forth and I did a video a while ago on, it was actually technically it's on this channel because this channel was called Bit by Bit
before
it the Weekly Warpipe. So it's a game hunting episode on this channel. And I remember I wanted to make it all fun and dramatic, so I brought all his money in a briefcase so I can open it up.
That's awesome.
We did the thumbnail. So I got an extra Virtual Boy in the box and he had Jack Bros, all the classics, and he had recently sold the boxes to all them to like fund for something else.
Sure.
But even the manual on like Jack Bros is like $600 or something.
Yeah, it's wild. If you had a box Virtual Boy, I wouldn't sell it if I were you.
Well, what's funny, so
are you are you saying that because I sold mine?
Yeah, we're over here. We're over here, and Jay's like, I don't have mine anymore, even though I got it for $12 or whatever.
No, so the thing is I have two Virtual Boys.
Oh, do you? So, I didn't.
Yeah, because I found one at a yard sale for $5, and then I got one boxed, complete in box for $10. So dude, my Virtual Boy spendings are $15.
He's so thrifty. I love it.
So the one I had prior was actually in the Blockbuster Video rental case.
That's so cool.
So yeah. I have that one and then the box one. That's regular.
Nice. That's awesome. I know I got mine way later. I got mine actually in COVID, but that's why I got a good deal because people were trying to sell stuff when they didn't have jobs.
Right.
I think mine was a Macari find, if I'm not mistaken. And they said that it had like a little bit of issues with some of the, I don't know if it was the right eye or not, but when I got it, it was fine. So I don't, maybe it like jolted back in place when they shipped it, but I haven't had any problems with
there
it.
There you go.
That's a cool console, dude. But it's like, for me, maybe I can play for 10 minutes. Then I'm like, okay, I need a break.
It's such a novelty, right? Like, yeah. It's just like one of those things like, all right, cool. I experienced it. I'm good for another like 8 months.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Well, that brings up another good point of working at a game store is you get to try these systems out that you often don't see or get to play. Like someone brought in one of the CDX eyes, like the standalone Sega's CD system. That, what was another one? The GameCube Q.
Oh, yes. Right.
It's all like mirrored and shiny, and that's the one that plays.
It's actually a really pretty console if you're a GameCube collector, man.
Right. Yeah. Gotta keep it wiped off with all the
I know. Yeah, the fingerprints ruined that one.
Andy, did you recently tell me that you guys don't take Atari anymore, or you just got rid of it all?
No, so we actually sold it all. You know, Atari didn't move very well in the store, aside from a couple collectors that were like more eclectic on that box stuff, you know, more rare. So we had Atari that the store had taken in for 20 plus years. Each game was only like 85 cents. And somebody came in and literally bought the lot. Like they bought every Atari game that we had, because apparently Atari Age had some promotion that if you like return the carts to them, they would give you some type of special Atari merchandise or something like that.
Huh.
At least that's what the customer was telling me was the reason they were buying it. So yeah, I mean, I'm saying like 100 different combats and
right.
You know, like 100 different, I forget what the other one was called, that was pretty popular on it. But, you know, there were some ETs in there and
they
were all loose, you know. And so now going forward, we're collecting complete in box stuff and the console if it's in good condition, especially Switch. But aside from that, the loose stuff, it just doesn't move anymore. It's
like pointless to take, really.
Well, so here's what's sad is you have collectors that are legitimately fans of Atari and they love that original Atari. Kind of the same reason people collect vinyl, but that customer base is like 50 to 70 years old now. It's very rare to get like a collector that comes in and shops a retro video game store that's that age that really loves the Atari.
Right.
You know, because maybe that would have been like a ma dad that played it with their kid in the day that really wants to maybe relive that a little bit. The kids themselves are like, eh, I kind of moved on to Nintendo. But now I'm starting to see that trend of the Atari getting skipped over happening to NES. When I go to conventions, NES is like on the ground in boxes now. And that makes me sad, you know, to know that like that's the next wave that people
our
just
time is coming.
Atari.
That yeah, makes right, me happy because it's going to be cheaper to pay. Yeah. Get little Samson down under $500 bucks and I might consider it.
Well, and I think there'll always be certain titles that will kind of stay there, but the average on NES is definitely the allure has gone down. Everyone is all about that Gen 6
GameCube.
Right now. Yeah, yeah. GameCube, PS2, Dreamcast, and Xbox. Like, yeah. That's the jam.
Okay. I regret getting rid of so one of the original Xbox games Xbox games that I owned was Jurassic Park Operation Genesis.
Oh yeah.
And I sold it in 2010 to like help me pay for a TV. And I didn't even know it was rare. I just listed it with my Xbox with a lot of games. And I remember I had it in my hand. I was like, "Oh, I really kind of want to keep this, but I don't know, whatever." And I just dropped it in the lot, and then that lot went up quick. I think I sold it for like $50 for the whole lot.
Oh yeah.
But and then a couple years later, like 3 years later, when I got into retro gaming, I found out that, you know, like that was like a coveted game, and I was like, "Oh my god, I used to have it. It was like original."
Dude, if we knew what we knew now, guys, we would be millionaires, bro. Like if we could keep all of the stuff we had as kids in
right, right.
Ooh, it'd be incredible.
I know it. I guess we could try to jump over to some questions I posted on Instagram or Facebook page and whatnot. So we'll see what they had to say.
What did you say? What did you say?
Springfield, let's hear from you.
Let's hear from you. All right, let's see. We'll head over here. I think there was one person on our Facebook page here. Yeah. Austin Mills.
Ooh.
Wants to know, what are the biggest unexpected hurdles you came across running a retro game store? Ooh. He kind of has a couple questions. I guess I could just read them off and you can answer them.
Oh, yeah, we can go one by one if you want. Unexpected hurdles. You know, funny enough, the store itself is, I'm lucky that it's a legacy store, as in it's been around for 20 years. It thrives. People know that we're there. But the people that actually run the whole building that we're at don't allow a lot of street advertising. So we can't have sandwich boards. We can't put any murals on our brick wall on the side. We're not allowed, you know, we have to pay for a signage that's up top. That's not really clear for people to see. So honestly, getting our name out there aside from social media, is kind of hard, on that side of things. So I would say that's the biggest one for me, because my ultimate goal is to obviously grow the business. I want to make sure that more people know about us, but the fact that we can't advertise to the general public on the street aside from only our store sign. Mm-hmm. It's tough. So
like none of those like people with the big arrows.
Games. Do a sign spinner or anything. Like, yeah, there was
what about a blimp that like flies from the top,
like a turtle blimp that has it. Yeah.
Well, like, you know, they make some big balloon that looks like blimpish. Just like fly up from the roof.
No, the next step is like, we got to like advertise for like the drive here in Greenville, you know, get our sign out on the field or something.
Oh,
like that'd
be sick. That would be
like a billboard
or like a dasher, billboard. Like at the Swamp Rabbits game.
Yeah. I should go retro Rick style and on the highway, just get a billboard of me like video game cavern this way.
Oh, does Rick do that?
Yeah. In Arkansas, as you're traveling to the city that has Rick's store, he's on a giant billboard that says biggest retro game store in Arkansas. And it's just his face smiling.
That's
on
amazing.
It.
I wonder if I could Google that.
That's so freaking legit.
When I came into a store, I was like, dude, do you literally have a billboard? He's like, you know, I do.
That's funny. So wild.
That was funny.
Yes, I want to see Andy's face plastered all over Greenville, please.
Oh, dear Lord. I don't want to lose customers.
You won't.
And what else we get? What have been your most successful ways to encourage the community engagement with your customers?
Okay, so the short answer is do a giveaway. People love giveaways. Like, literally, we did a really fun post. It was a mystery game where the label had been torn off of the a Super Nintendo game. And we basically said, like, guess the game, win the game. And it went nuts. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of submissions. But then we started to get bots. And then the bots said something like, hey, you've won. Click this link to find out how. Oh, and then it was just like chaos. And the game ended up being Mario All-Stars. And somebody guessed it. But we haven't done another one of those since, because there's no way to stop the bot like jumping in. So that, though, is like the quickest way to engage your community is like a really either like a poll or like a gaming related question that they can engage in. But then adding something that's like either a prize or like a thank you is a great way to bring the community on, for sure.
I'll jump in on this, because we had in at Retro Games, they came up with it's called CONNGO, CONNGO, and it stands for Connecticut Gamers Organization. Okay.
CONNGO. Yeah.
And basically what it is I think they've switched to bi-monthly. So bi-monthly, they have a swap meet inside the store where they allow the customers to come in and sell or trade items. They'll kind of move the racks around. And they were doing it, so the store would close at like 9 o'clock. So they were doing it 8 o'clock to midnight. So you kind of get this after hours kind of party, and it would get people together, and then, you know, you could do a few giveaways at the event. So they would switch stores, you know, it'd be at the Orange store 1 month, you skip a month, and it's at the Norwalk store. So this way, if someone's in far in the state, they want to drive down, then they can go to that store there. But it's definitely brought people together and cool place to hang out and maybe make some trades as well.
Yeah, you know what's tough is we've always wanted to do something like that. Our store is just, we can't even walk in the store, let alone like set up any additional tables or do a trade night. We would have to do it in a separate location, which we've actually talked about possibly having a stopgap for Siege and having like a cool trade night event at one of either community centers or where the original Siege used to be, which was like at the hotel, something like that. You know, we have to wait for one of the buildings next to us for those tenants to leave for us to be able to put the wall down and take that spot.
Do you think that's going to happen?
I will say, apparently, over the 20 years the store's been there, that store, that building right next to us, or the suite right next to us, has been occupied like 7 or 8 different times. So on average, you'd have about 2 to 2.5 years before that goes. And the people that have been there now, I think, have been there for almost a year. So maybe by next year,
is the board game store still there?
No, nope, not anymore.
Wow.
The only thing that's close to us is another like trading card / board game called the Game Castle, but they're a couple blocks away from us. But no, there's nothing in that strip anymore.
Andy, are you guys allowed to have food trucks?
So I want to, but we have the trash cans right next to us. If I was going to do the food truck, I'd have to block off the parking lot. And the fact that the current owners of the building don't even let us have signage, it's been a rough go. So like we have some, like, I guess that goes back to those hurdles. We've had that because all we want to do is community engagement. All we want to do is have like basically a huge celebration of loving games and giving people an opportunity to get those games at the store. But you have these struggles of space issues as well as the location. Cause literally you'd be eating your taco at the taco truck next to the dumpster. Like it's just really gross.
That is true. That is true.
I hate that.
Yeah. What if you had like a really big draw from like a really cool, handsome local YouTuber that like has like, you know, like,
dude, I already said, if you want to come in and do like an autograph signing and we'll just like NES Addict is here from like 2 to 4 today. Sign in games, dude,
that would be so sick. Actually, I wonder if anybody would give a crap.
Oh, they would. People love you, bro.
Three, you and Robert and Russ. That's the three
there you go. Hey, at least you got three. At least you got three. Yep.
And then Austin finishes up with, what advice do you wish you had gotten when you were first getting started?
Ooh, you know, it's tough on the store, right? Because in this situation, I don't own the store, but I did take it over in all its operational aspects. So, the biggest thing for me is getting everything priced right. We like our store. It's funny, a dollar doesn't seem to matter to people in genuine conversation, but when you look at it as a price tag, knowing where those prices are consistently in the top of my head and that research would have been more beneficial. Like, I have to do a lot more research than I expected I would have to as a game like comes into the building. Mm-hmm. When someone's doing a trade, I would love it to only take me 5 minutes, but it's going to take closer to like 20 to get through a stack of stuff, right? To make sure mm-hmm. you're pricing it right. But that's hard though. It's, you know, no matter what you do, our market's volatile. The prices change all the time. So Absolutely. We do our best, but we were always, I say we're about 5% lower than an eBay. So you're always going to get a better deal at the Cavern.
True.
Yeah.
Nice. Excellent. Yeah. I'd say from with my position, I was a manager at a movie theater, and Chris, the owner, would come in to see movies, and we got it talking and this and that. And he's like, you know, I'm opening another store in Orange. I was looking for a manager. So I kind of went into the role that way. So I had was managing at a movie theater. I was like, all right, I'll switch over to games. I know games. And I had the Mario Kart car then, because there's a, let's see if I can Google it. There's a picture, if you look up Retro Games in Orange, and it has my old Mario Kart car outside for like the grand opening and stuff.
Oh, yeah, a great yeah. draw too from the road.
Right.
What's the, how long does it take you to get to SRS? If you were to, like, I don't know.
Like 9 hours, I think.
Okay. Have you driven the car that far before for events?
No, furthest I've gone, okay. I think it's 3 hours.
Yeah. We could do a live in store weekly warp pipe.
Yeah. We need Russ and Jay to show up. And then Russ has the car that people can come look at the store.
So here's the old.
Oh, car, nice. Yeah, that's one. Awesome.
So I'm parked right out front as a good draw.
I love it.
And Andy, what about, like, does anybody have like a vehicle with a big back window that you could like use the back of your window as like a almost like a sign, or like car wrapped?
If Watch I know this, Robert, like, yeah. he would 100% wrap his own truck if he could.
Because then you could wrap it and then park it out front. That would almost act like an extra sign.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea.
I'm just thinking about loopholes here.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. I'll review it. We'll see if it comes out the other end.
All right, let's see what we had on Instagram.
We got
Ty Gaming. All right, if someone wanted to open a store, what are three things you would suggest to avoid?
Ooh, is there more to that question? Or is that it?
Well, let's see. It might be a separate question. And what were some errors you made when you first started out that you wish you could go back and do differently?
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, you know, obviously that I think that question is geared towards someone that maybe first started a store in ownership. But you know, I've had enough knowledge in like businesses that I've ran previously to just say like you have to have the liquid cash and inventory before you start a store. So right. I think there's a lot of people who are like, man, I have a collection, and they have like a $50,000 collection. And I'm like, awesome. It's not enough, right? You literally have to have minimum $100,000 in product. You have to have liquid cash so that you can cover your expenses, your labor, your overhead, to make sure that you're at least set for 6 months. So I think a lot of people run into it starting at zero. And it kicks them in the butt like real fast. You know, that stuff catches up. You know, you have one slow week and you feel it. So I think that making sure that you're prepared better would be more helpful. Yeah.
Right. I think with Chris, when he was opening up that second location, would help is having that first so you can get the constant trade-ins and then kind of stockpile a lot of the common games. But you also want to have, you know, some of the good stuff. So when you do open and people come in, you're like, oh, wow, he has Conker's Bad Fur Day. He has whatever, Snatcher.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, if you walk in, it's just a bunch of Wii plays. People are going to walk out.
All the Burger King games on
Xbox. Yeah, right? Hey, hey, sneak King's awful, but the bike racers, not too bad.
Oh, the pocket bike.
Pocket racer.
Let's see. And then we got Scruffy Gif. Let's see. When you own a store, do you still want to go to a store, thrift, or normal to go game hunting? Or do you just wait for stuff to come in?
So it's a unique one. Our store is awesome, right? There is an employee discount, but we're, you know, our customers get first dibs. It has to be on the floor for 3 days. So when you get something cool, it doesn't last in the store very often. I've always loved the thrill of the hunt. So like I enjoy thrifting and flea markets and conventions because I like to browse. I like to look at that stuff. But I will say, no matter what you do for your job, if it's similar to what your hobby is, it will make you jaded. Like I go in and I see cool things all the time at our store. We literally have a Pokemon box sitting in the glass case right now. It's like $1,500. And I just see it every day. Like, it's like, well, there's a bird, you know, like I don't, it doesn't hit me the same way that it would have if I would have found that in the wild or saw it, you know, more limitedly. So, I think it's just a product of being around games all the time. It's exciting, but it's like, I come home and I'm like, I guess I'm just going to do something else today. I'm not in a game because I've been around it for 10 hours today.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, yep. Makes sense. Let's see. I think you had a second part to the question too. And what thing, game, display, toy, or oddity that before you owned a store, you had no idea existed that you're really into now because of the store?
So, again, just starting at the store, not owner, but I do run the operations of the store. I just found out, and this is me not being a Nintendo kid growing up, okay? When I was little, I had a Sega Genesis. I never had a Super Nintendo, so I missed out on Mario. I only played Killer Instinct. So, like, those types of things, I have to not fault myself for not knowing about them, but I didn't know Ghoul Patrol existed on the Super Nintendo till literally, like, a month and a half ago. Like, I didn't know that there was a sequel to Zombie Ate My Neighbors. And I was like, wait, what? Like, that's the same thing? Like, I don't know how in, like, me consuming media and being a retro game collector didn't know that existed, but somehow it slipped through. So, like, it's cool when that stuff happens, right?
Right. Yeah. I was going to say, Limited Run did a... didn't they have a combo pack with it? You were probably like, why are they throwing that game in there?
Yeah, I was like, that doesn't make any sense. I wasn't looking for it at all. So it obviously just slipped. But, you know, that type of stuff, you just learn more and more every single day as you're surrounded by it.
Right. I would say a lot of the consoles that got traded in, oftentimes I had never seen before or got to try out. Like the Fairchild. The Fairchild F.
The Channel F.
Channel F, yeah.
Yeah, the Channel F that has like two weird looking joysticks.
I don't even know what that is.
It is. Russ might be able to pull it up, but dude, it's a goofy looking. So it was basically the very first video game console ever created. Like that was very unique. I have one right now. It was my dad's. He bought it at Sears.
Oh, you know what? I have seen it. I remember you showing it to me now that we've talked about it.
Yes, it's very strange. It literally looks like this, like, massage, like, yeah, the controls look like a massage slash something else you can't talk about, and then the games themselves, this top lifted up and stored the games in it, and then you could insert it into the front, and they were and they were very much, you know, Atari, you know, in the way that played, you know. I think we had blackjack and like cat, I forget what it's called, but it's like two cowboys are facing each other as a shootout. I don't know if that was actually on the Channel F, but I feel like I have that memory when I was a kid. The cartridges look like 8-tracks. So, right. But I mean, so does Atari. So.
That's a wild system.
Yep. Yep.
So yeah, definitely seeing cool stuff like that. Let's see. And then on our YouTube page, if you go to the community tab, we usually post on there. Nop Top says, what questions do you get the most from visitors to the store that you're tired of answering?
That's a great question.
So right now, I will say it's really hard to take in PS4 and Xbox Ones right now. They're literally, they go for like $20, $25, like most of the stuff that's not there. And we get a call every half hour asking if we'll give more than GameStop. Because GameStop is not giving them anything for it. So I know that's kind of a weird answer, but I get that call every day. You take an Xbox One and it's like, is it the original? Yeah. Does it have the controller with it? No. Is it missing anything else? Well, maybe a power cable. And I'm like, I don't know, man, maybe $20. It's like, oh, that's really low. And then hang up on you. Like, you just like, there's no win there, man.
It's, right.
It's in a weird one because you're middle of the life cycle on the current gen, which makes the last gen the least desirable right now.
Right.
So this is like the year that it has been bottom barrel price point on PS4 and Xbox One 2. So,
wow.
Yep. Yep. But I mean, I don't have anyone call me and they're like, do you have a little Samson? Do you have a little Samson? Do you have a little Samson or anything like that?
I'm calling tomorrow and asking that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Do you have Battletoads?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. That type of stuff.
Nice. Let's see what else we got. Steve V's Man Cave Arcade. All right. Assuming the video game store started as a passion for retro gaming, does running the store affect your love for the hobby? You ever get burned out of the hobby since it's become a day-to-day job and you're surrounded by it every day? Or has it done the opposite? Has your passion for retro gaming through running this store?
So before I started at the store, I literally had made like kind of like a commitment to myself that I was working on collection 3.0, which is after you have had your childhood collection 1.0, 2.0, you go ham, you buy way too much stuff. 3.0, you finally like narrow it down to the stuff that you only love. And I kind of was at that point. And then I started at the store and now I'm finding things that I want every single day that I work there. 4.0. Like, yeah. That's
the recollection.
The recollection. I have not gone ham, but I will say it rekindled my N64 love because I'm going for a complete collection. I only have 4 games left to
That's
do it.
Wild.
Nice. But now I'm going for all the fantastic colors that I did not previously. I'm going for the Japanese titles.
Ooh.
So like the collection is like going to be pretty ridiculous surrounded by the N64. But yeah, it rekindled for sure. For sure.
Nice. Yeah, I will say me working at Retro Games Plus, it's just cool to see so many different games come through that maybe you've seen on YouTube channels or whatever watching. And you're like, oh, here is Little Samson. Like, I get to try it out. Or what are these oddball games that no one ever talks about? But it was certainly hard not spending your entire paycheck there, right? Like,
oh, all the time. I mean, even just this last month, I've probably thrown down $300, which is not, I mean, that's not chump change to some people, but I'm just like, I didn't really need this stuff, but I did need this stuff, if that makes sense. Like, I can't stop, won't stop, man. I'm a game collector at heart, but I play my stuff. I don't entomb it in plastic, so I'm not like a graded guy. I'm not into that at all. Like, I collect to play. So for me, if I find it interesting, then I'd want it in the collection.
Do you guys have, like we used to do at Retro Games, have like save files for employees in back where they can put stuff kind of away until they have money for it, but there was like a time limit, like you couldn't put something Little Samson in back for 6 months till you had enough money?
That it's so tough, right? Because like sometimes there's a disconnect with the employees, right? Understanding like, hey, yes, you want that, and it's very cool that you put it in the back, but like if you're not realistically going to be able to pick it up in a couple months, like there's probably 5 or 6 customers that would have, and at the end of the day, your job is to bring in revenue so that you're in the green. And when you take away items that will help with that goal, it's a really tough one, right? Because it, at the end of the day, they don't want to make somebody else rich. They just want their game. But like as a business like operator, you have to think about those types of things. So yes, people have stacks in the back of stuff that they would be interested in. If it's been sitting back there for too long, we always kind of like, let's reevaluate. Is this stuff you're really going to get? If not, put it back. I was just talking to Austin, for Video Game Corner, and he also runs Siege, if you guys don't know Austin. But he basically was telling me, like, some of his employees do the same thing, but then it was like, be like that 6 month to like an 8 month mark. And he's like, guys, you can't keep doing this. Like, I need the product out on the floor for customers if you're not going to get it.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Do you ever have really annoying friends that try to do that?
Like, put this in back for me.
I haven't done it yet, but I know I used to do it for Robin all the time.
Well, I'll be honest. Our store does have a layaway program. You can come in and you can put down 20% on whatever you want. You get 30 days to pay it off. So if you never have the money at the time and you can at least afford that 20% down, then you can pretty much have most of the things on hold once you see them. So it's, I mean, there's totally an option there. It's just, you know, when someone does a layaway, that takes our opportunity to sell it to anyone else away.
Right.
So when that expires at 30 days, it's like, well, yeah, unfortunately, I have to put it back on the shelf, but we don't keep that money. Some stores do. We just put it back on a trade credit for you. So at least, you know, our stores do
nice.
The best we can to help them out.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Put it towards something else.
Yeah, nice. Absolutely.
Let's see what else we got. We got Mike says, what was your original investment in your business? Positives, negatives of the business.
So I have a feeling that that's more geared towards like for an ownership. But, you know, I actually don't, you know, it's tough. So the previous owners, Robin and Lorraine, they had built it from scratch, right? They had like, there was no investment there. And then Robert, when he purchased the business, that would have just been like the handoff and what they agreed upon. So I think anybody that's going to start, I will just go back to like $100,000 in inventory and 6 months worth of expenses. Like if you can do that, you could probably start a store, but then also know you're at that store 7 days a week if you want to be successful.
That's right.
You know, there's no give. I will say one of the best videos to come out in a long time is the one Phoenix Resale did with a store owner that showed how much sacrifice that they gave to make their store successful, and that they were quantity and low margin to be able to turn things fast. And that's kind of the nature that we're in right now. Like literally a lot of people in this pseudo recession, silent recession, whatever you want to call it, are trading more and more stuff in because they need the money to pay their bills. And so if you can give them a little bit more on that side of things and you can still squeeze out a little bit less of that margin, then that would be a good business strategy for you. But not everybody's in that position to do it. I don't know what anybody's loan's going to be, what your interest rate back is going to be. You know, you have to plan that out in the long run. If you hope to have employees, then you have to have at least, you know, something coming in to help you with that.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. Sure.
Andy's investment is blood, sweat, and tears.
Waves and games. How many times a day do people ask you to lower the price of things?
Oh, Peter coming in with the hot questions, dude. So this is a very, very difficult thing. So there is a huge culture out here in the Southeast of garage sale / flea markets that I didn't have in the Pacific Northwest. So a lot of people are used to bargaining, negotiating, haggling in price. And unfortunately, we are a retail store. We've set those prices because we have to cover that overhead. We know what we're in on it. So if someone's buying like a big game lot, like let's say they're grabbing like $400 worth of stuff from us in various games, I'm going to kick you back like a discount. I can help you out with something like that. But on a single item that's like $12, like, can you make it 10? Unfortunately, those are things that are like, man, you know, we barely make anything on it as it is. By the time we're done as a store, and this is probably any retro store that exists, their margin is only anywhere from like 10 to 6%. They're not making that full price whatsoever. They bought it for, I don't know, half, 60%. Then so they have 40% to squeeze out cost, overhead, employees. And by the time you're done, maybe you have a little extra to reinvest in your store. So you're not buying a yacht owning a retro video game store, just FYI.
Right. That was going to say.
But you are buying a little Samson.
Yeah.
I was going to bring up with you kind of almost refusing to take Atari stuff and this and that. Like,
yeah,
some of the games you almost have to turn away where you have, okay, like, how many Maddens do you need? How many Call of Duties on Xbox 360 do you want? Do I need 30 copies? And then it's not selling for $8. Do we have to put it down to two to try to sell it and then not even take it?
And then, well, and that happens a lot, right? I can go out to the shelf and I'm like, okay, if you guys take another Dance Central, I'm going to kill you. Like, right. If you guys take another Battlefield 4, I'm going to kill you. Like, that's not, it's just sitting out there. And I, even though it wasn't a whole lot in trade, I'd rather you put that towards a Mario, you know, new Super Mario Brothers or Wii Sports that literally will sell every single day in the store. Mm-hmm. So you just have to be smart. You just have to be smart about what you bring in.
That's absolutely one of the things that I think Robin maybe did. I can't say this for sure because I've been out there every day, but like, I think maybe sometimes she took things maybe she shouldn't have. I know. She probably took some things from me. She should.
Well, I mean, there is one thing, right? So if you have a customer that you know is more of a regular and is going to give you stuff over and over again, then I'm more likely willing to want to work with you on that trade. Cause I'm like, well, if I help you out on this janky stuff today, maybe you're going to bring me a Super Nintendo tomorrow. Maybe you're going to bring Nintendo 64, you know, something that will move. But sometimes it is just garbage. And as much as I want to, that GameStop third-party controller is not going to sell in my store. Like, it doesn't work. Like, it's been sitting there. People scoff at it. And someone's like, oh, man, yeah, I mean, I looked online. It goes for $15. And I'm like, I'll be honest. That's going to sit in my store for 2 years if someone wants it.
Right.
And most likely, they're just going to eventually buy something else. So it's like, you don't want to fill your store with stuff.
Stickle Fritz.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you got to be smart about that.
Nice. And then was there a last question here? El Flamo, what game do you most often say you can't buy?
Ooh, like personally?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Or if maybe like
probably within the store.
Within the store?
What game do you
like? Most what often game does the store turn away the most?
Oh, what do we turn away? I mean, honestly, at this point, it would be Atari. Like, if someone comes in with a box of Atari stuff and it's literally like they're like 50 cent games. It's going to be a no-go. Like, I'm just like, number one, I'll take that stuff in. I can't give you much for it. So that's kind of silly. It probably will cost us less or more money to sit here and have a conversation than the money I'll give to you for that stuff. So a lot of that stuff, it's like, yeah, if it's not in box right now, I can't take that stuff in. Also, a lot of people bring in discs. We're in a very unique time frame with the disc-based systems. Disc rot is starting to happen. And when disc rot starts to happen, that data layer is being destroyed on the disc. And a lot of times I have to turn away some things that they might be great games, Sega, Dreamcast, GameCube, but the data on it or the topside damage is just too far gone that I can't risk it. You know, even if the game plays, I can't sit and play a game for 8 hours to make sure that it plays till the end. I can make sure that it's
absurd.
For 10 minutes. So I have to turn away some stuff that's way too damaged, unfortunately.
And yeah, I expect my NES games that I buy that to be completely tested. So like Battletoads, if I get to the last level and I can't get through it, I'm going to be really mad.
Sorry, bro. Well, we got a 30-day defect policy for that.
Good answer. It'll take me longer than 30 days to get to the last level.
That's the goal. Gotcha.
I still haven't beaten it. And I was using this.
Oh man, I think I had to use the Game Genie too. Battletoads is so hard. It's so hard.
Nice. Hey, we got a voicemail, Jay.
Sweet.
A voicemail.
If you guys want to call into the show, we do have a number. It's 949-682-9277. That's 949-682-WARP. You can leave us a voicemail and tell us how we're doing. Give us some topics.
That's how good Andy looks today. Look at him. I love having Andy on. Like, it feels like I'm hanging out with you for a change.
I know. Funny enough, you could leave for 10 minutes and then you'd be right next to me.
I should just do that. Just show up right next to me.
Jay just disappears and then just like slowly comes into the line.
That's nice. Works. All right, let's see what they said. Oh, yeah. Wait, I got to play my thing. Here we go. I keep dreaming.
It's for you.
Hey, what's going on, Weekly Warpipe guys? This is Colby from Purging Splurge Drifting. A nice. Couple questions for this week's topic in regards to owning and running a game store. Mm. I had three small questions I just wanted to ask.
Okay.
First was, have you ever had any crazy people to try and trade stuff in, either not happy with the amount that you offer them or just want to trade in a crazy amount of stuff and you don't think that maybe it's legit or something along that line, some crazy mm-hmm. person story. The second one was, what's the most epic thing to trade in to the store, either high value or holy grail item? And the third was, how do you deviate from collecting, keeping something awesome that comes in the store versus keeping it just for sale because you're running a business? Been listening to the podcast ever since you guys started. It's great. I look forward to it every Wednesday and Saturday. Russ, you got to jump on Pest Terminator and start playing that live stream sometime.
Pest Terminator.
And you guys are doing great. Cheers. Look forward to the next episode. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Colby.
Thanks so much, Colby. Nice. Appreciate
That's
that.
Awesome. That's awesome. You guys remember those questions? Because I don't.
One of them was, God, my ADD is so bad.
We're the worst.
Hold on.
So one of them was like, how do you differentiate taking something cool versus profit? So I will say, as a business owner, cool will bring people in. Something that is logical will sell. So like, even though a Turbo Duo is awesome, that will sit on the store shelf for 2 years, where something like Mario Kart, I could get 40 of them in and sell them literally the next day. I cannot keep my Nintendo 64 and GameCube stuff in stock. So right now I am always buying that stuff and we were putting it out as fast as humanly possible, opposed to buying something like, I mean, I'd buy a little Samson, but I don't know if my demographic is ready to come in and snag it, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, that's a, it's a high price game. And normally what we call those is con bait. Lot of that stuff we bring to a convention because that's who's bringing the money and ready to throw down big dollars. You're mm-hmm. walking in the store. It's often more just for their leisurely day. So, yep. And now I'm trying to remember the other two.
Crazy person story.
Oh, well, crazy person. Okay. I will say I have not been attacked or had any, like, I haven't had any guns drawn yet, but you get really close when someone's down and out and they're bringing something that they may not have have sold before. And you offer what they deem is too low. It's kind of a weird give and take where they expect you to buy it. And if you're not willing to come to the level they want, they get aggressive. And I will say that that happens every now and again, occasionally. Most of our customer base is really cool when we explain that to them. But there's sometimes things get hairy, man. Stuff, you know, threats happen. My employees are called like terrible names. They cause a scene. The cops have to be called. That type of stuff happens. So. That just kind of goes with the nature of the business. When you're offering mm-hmm. cash and you're dealing with a money transaction there, it's the same thing as a pawn shop. It can be hairy. So yeah.
We would do some trades and obviously you usually give them store credit first, which mm-hmm. is what, you know, is higher. And then it's like,
yeah,
$500. You're like I need cash. It's right. more like 300 or whatever. And they're like,
right. You gotta give them incentive to keep it in store.
Yeah, right. We had an example where I had a police officer come in and he was like, hey, did that gentleman just sell you stuff? And I go, yeah. And he goes, it's all stolen. And he has a stolen car outside. And, you know, we can't verify that it's stolen. We can just write down the serial numbers as someone selling something to us.
Right.
But you just don't know. So you just have to be really diligent on making sure that you have an ID with every single transaction so that mm-hmm. when the cop does come in and needs to review that stuff, we have it available. And we can also help if it's being stolen from other stores too. So
I'm sorry I put you in that situation, Andy.
Yeah, you're so rude.
Did the cop, did you get to keep the merchandise that he had sold you or Did the cop have to like
compensate? No. We actually, it was still on the counter when he walked in.
Oh, I see.
So we were actually able, no, I had to turn him away. There was never any money exchanged because he didn't have an identification and wouldn't give it to us. And now we know why.
Right.
Yeah, but it's just kind of being careful about that type of stuff. Anytime you're dealing with giving someone cash for their tech, quote unquote, valuable stuff, it gets dicey with some people, especially if they're down and out.
Right. Yeah. We had some issues with, we were also selling electronics. So we did have phones and like iPads. And again, I had spoken about the low employee numbers. So they had two individuals come in and they were kind of looking at the phones, and they had like the showcase with like the higher end items or whatever.
Yeah.
Was like off to the side. And they asked the employee, like, can I look at something in this showcase over here? So they went over there, and then their buddy stayed here and was able to reach around the counter.
Oh, yeah.
And snag a few phones from there. So it was like, and we have security cameras in there so we could review the footage, but then it's like, well, if the cops don't, like, how are we going to get an ID off of blurry footage? We have, made our police report.
That's always hard. I will say the cavern's been really good at keeping product not on the floor. If there is anything that we have that's on the floor, it's going to be accessory driven. But most of that stuff is going to be under $30 anyway. And we've probably lost some stuff, people steal cases and stuff like that, but we don't have any of the discs on the floor. So, you know, aside from that, maybe going every now and again, I don't think the theft is as bad. We haven't lost anything big yet. I'm going to knock on wood, because it happens to everybody. But, you know, we even had, you know, we had to move our gift cards, digital gift cards, because people are starting to try to swipe those now, too. So,
okay. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Let me see. I was going to play back. I think we're missing one question he had.
Yeah, there's one
answered.
More.
Yeah.
Hey, so what's going on?
Get a replay here.
Sure. This is Colby from Virgin Splurge Drifting. A couple questions for this week's topic in regards to owning and running a game store. I had three small questions I just want to ask. Have you ever had any crazy people to try to trade stuff in, either not happy with the amount that you offer them or just want to trade in a crazy amount of stuff and you don't think that maybe it's legit or something along that line, some crazy person story? The second one was, what's the most epic thing you trade in to the store?
The most epic thing.
You know, it's so tough too, because it's like, since I've been there, Pokemon Box might have been the biggest thing when it comes to valuable that's come through the store. The store has had a little Samson in the past, but that the biggest one right now is a Jaws 5 screw that a gentleman is trying to bring in, and I want to say it goes for about $1,200 if I'm not
mistaken. Let me go check my Jaws real quick.
Yeah, the Jaws 5 screw is ridiculous. And so he was asking for value the other day, so that might be a big one that comes in. I mean, at this, it's so funny. The Pokemon stuff is really valuable, but like Grail for a lot of people, anything from like, I mean, we've had some inbox games that are like for the $500 or $600, but they're not necessarily like, I haven't had a Nintendo World Championships come in or anything like that. You know, that's really a lot of people's grail. Like, to have that one in the case on display or anything like that would be wild. But you're going to have to throw down like 18 to 20,000 on that guy. So that liquid cash isn't always sitting there either.
I'd say I have a fun story with Ash trying to look up stuff here. Let's see.
Oh, okay.
Okay, on that. So someone had come into the store and trade it this large trade in of a whole mix of stuff, TurboGrafx stuff, Saturn stuff, like really, really good trade in. And he dropped it off because it took hours to go through it.
Right.
And we sent him a price and he was happy with whatever we were offering, paid the guy. And then it was like maybe 2 days later, I was working and the guy came in and he was just like, oh, like, I got it back home and I ended up finding this box of like manuals and stuff. Like, you could just have it. Like, it was with that stuff. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, whatever. And so I was going through it, and in that box, there was a manual for a game called Magical Chase.
Oh, okay. For the TurboGrafx.
So this is like a $1,500 manual. The game itself is like $4,000.
Wow.
Here. And I was like, what? Like, I was just going through. My boss didn't even know. And like,
just hanging in there. Yeah, that's crazy, man. Honestly, we've had 20 years worth of manuals and cover art that's sitting in the back that I'm still going through right now. So I don't even know if there's anything back there because I haven't had to cross-reference it yet, but it's very possible.
Right.
That there's a lot there. Yeah.
Manuals there. Someone else ended up trading in a statue. Really see here, like huge. It's from Skyrim.
Okay.
It was like, like the guy with the like helmet and the horns and this. I think he must have gotten it at GameStop or whatever. This thing was like, you know, 6.5 feet tall, or it was huge.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God. So that stayed in the store for quite a little bit. And then he ended up selling it to someone for a couple $100.
Yeah. We would, you know, if we were to ever have a statue or something like that come in the store, as much as we'd want it, we may have to turn it away because we wouldn't have the space. So unless we could store it off site, that would be a hard one for us to be able to take in. Literally, as Jay knows, we can't. I don't even know where we put it if we had something like that.
Yeah, I don't know.
That'd be crazy. Yeah, I don't know. We'd have to redo the entire store around the statue.
The coolest thing I ever got at the cavern is this Nintendo Power magazine holder right here.
Okay. See, what's funny, there's a Nintendo Power. I forget what issue it is, but there was a special Pokemon card that was in the leaflet on one of Nintendo Powers that was only given or being able to be used during E3. And within that Nintendo Power magazine, if that's there, it ends up being like a ridiculous amount. So that's some stuff that we go through that we're like, oh, well, we're sitting on like 100 different Nintendo Powers back here, and we ended up finding one. So like,
no way.
Yeah. Nice. So like, that was super cool to
know. You should did a video on that.
I forget how it came across. I want to say Shane from Game Central. Yeah. Shane from Game Central Station told us about it. And I was like, oh, okay. I wonder if that would be there. And he was thumbing through it. So when he found it, it wasn't like organic. So it's like, when I want to film something for the store, I hate when it's staged. So I'd always want it to be organic. So that would have been cool. But it was like, we already found it. Then we moved on to the cost. And like, we just, you know, the rest was history. Bang, boom. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Nice. I'm trying to think if there was any other cool stories. We used to get a lot of those, either the Master Chief, like helmet, like display came in. And there was another one with like a gas mask. I don't know what game that one was from.
Fallout?
Borderlands. Yeah. So that stuff was kind of neat. What else came in? My boss, since Kobe had just called in, my boss had gotten a complete inbox of Pesterminator on NES, and that was in his case because I guess that was the game that he, I guess, apparently bought maybe at a flea market or something, and then went to like sell it and learned it had value, and that kind of sparked the whole like, oh, like I should start finding these retro games and maybe open up a store or whatever. So he still has his complete box copy of Pesterminator somewhere.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, that's
I gotta get a copy of this Pesterminator game.
I don't know if it plays good at all, but it certainly looks strange.
It's trying. Oh, there it is. Yeah.
It nice. Always reminds me of like Spy vs. Spy with the art.
Yeah, he looks weird.
So who knows on that? do you guys do any online sales stuff? Like,
oh my goodness. Yeah, I guess we didn't even talk about that part. So it was a necessity through COVID. When COVID happened and all the stores had a mandate that they weren't able to sell in store, the Video Game Cavern legitimately created this website and is now one of our branches of revenue at this point. It is a stream. We probably get anywhere from, I don't know, we're probably sitting at like 50 orders a week, I would assume.
Okay.
Something like that. You know, if you break the week down, there's like 3 or 4 that come in each day. So like that, yeah, that's a pretty big one. The website is very cool because everything you're looking at is the true inventory of the store. So there's never anything that you can't shop for on our website, either have it held as store pickup or have it shipped to you. Our crew processes them every single morning. We get them shipped out that day, and then you should expect them in 2 business days. So that's actually really cool. I think that's helped the store out a lot to have some more reach. Mm-hmm. But the biggest thing for us now is to just explain to people that that exists. So there's got to be an alternative to DK Oldies, man. I promise you.
When, that's hilarious. So during COVID, when I still had my Patreon, every month I would use my Patreon money to buy games from the Game Cavern. And they would just ship them to my house, and then I'll do my videos. It was great. I loved it.
There you go.
And also, back in the day, Gamer, I know for a fact he makes orders here and there from you guys.
Yes, absolutely. It's very, very common that we'll get that. But I mean, that's just been a really cool component, right? Because locally, it's awesome to have our customer base come in. But for us to, you know, more and more people to know us, especially around the area or, you know, in the Southeast, is kind of our goal. And so that's kind of our next strategy, is to market more of the online. Not because we don't love the Mon Pas shop. I don't ever want us to feel corporate in any way. I want that to continue to happen. But I want there to be that convenience for anybody that loves the cavern to be able to shop.
I want you to be the next Joey.
Well, you brought up a good, like, DK Oldies, right? I feel like their online presence is just huge all over on social media.
Yes.
And I feel like, how do you feel that you're handling the social media aspect of the store, getting the name out there and doing
Terribly, 100% terribly. So the reason, no, and I'm being honest with you, the
terrible
reason
special guest
is you have to devote your entire time to social media.
Absolutely.
We have to be filming content. We have to be taking photos. You have to have your entire staff interested in being on camera and your staff being interested in being possibly a character.
Andy, we just got to talk Robert into spending more money to hire me.
That's it. But I mean, I was brought on with my background in YouTube and filmmaking to do some of that stuff.
Okay.
Well, the problem is as a general manager, the day-to-day operations, customers, it's retail. So no matter what you do, you're dealing with employees, you're dealing with the various issues and things that happen with employees. I mean, if I have a call out and I have an employee that calls out for a couple days, that might be now 2 days I can't do social media now. I don't even have time to take a picture. And if you guys know, if you walked into my store and I spent 10 minutes taking a photo of something and not acknowledging you or not giving that customer the time of day appropriately, then you could also earn a bad reputation. Oh, well, every time I come in, they're just on their phones. But it's like, well, that's just the nature of the business in 2024, that you have to make social media part of your daily grind. So having that balance is actually really, really difficult, and you almost have to invest fully in it. There's a store near us called Toy Federation, and they employ a full-time filmmaker that follows them around and creates their episodes so that they can run their store. And
it's for great,
for you to do both. Oh, it's incredible. And they blew up within like 6 months because they did it right. But when you're trying to basically, right, you can only give so much, right? You got 100%. 50% on the store, 50% on social media. It's going to come through. So do we do a good job of at least making some presence there? Absolutely. But it's just unrealistic to think we can have it happen as frequently as we want without being able to like focus on that, if that makes sense. So
I just need Robert to start really bringing in the cash, and he's like, I need to hire. And then he can hire me, and I can hang out with you every day and make videos about you. It'll be great.
Yes. I need a cameraman. What we really need to do is legit like a Pawn Star situation. I need a customer to come in who agrees to be on camera, and we film the interaction of the trade. I would like to see that type of stuff happen more, but there's a lot more involved with that when you have a third party involved in the video making.
Right.
So, you know, especially like releasing their image to us to be able to use for monetary gain and all that type of crazy stuff. A lot of people don't think about that. They're like, don't just turn the camera on and do whatever you want to do. It's like, oh, that's a lot more intricate than that.
Funny enough, on the flip side, so when I was at Retro Games managing there, I would do the morning shift. So I'd open up at 10 a.m. and I said no one else would come in till probably 2 o'clock. And oftentimes those mornings, no one would come into the store.
Right.
So me doing YouTube, I started kind of filming at the store and filming trade-ins. So then I had like Retro Games Plus Trade Minute. And then I started doing vlogs and stuff. And I just had a lot of downtime and it was okay because it's all promoting the store and I'm showing the product. The downside to that was I'd shoot the videos, edit them, and upload them. And by the time you're watching them, probably those items that came into the store have already sold.
Well, you know, I'll take a picture and if I can't post it till the next day, some of that stuff has happened. It's gone. And people are like, oh, is that available? And I'm like, yes, it was when I took the picture. But now that I was able to post it, that's gone. I will say to Jay's point, I have an absolutely fabulous owner of the business. He really loves to be a lot more back end, making sure our website and infrastructure set, making sure that we have the correct things ordered, making sure that overhead and the people are paid properly. And him being able to do that and that not being the part of my responsibility on that specific side does give me some time to do some social media for the store, which is fantastic. I could not do that without him and without him understanding the importance of it. Cause I think there's a lot of businesses that are like, oh, we don't need any of that. Like hibbity jibbity TikTok. Like, we could be a bakery without that. It's like, it's just part of the world now as we communicate.
Absolutely. So, yeah. And much like you're saying, like you kind of touched on that a little bit where the demographic, like with Atari and stuff, not taking that in. And I think, like you said, we're going to the GameCube and all this. So like those kids are on these apps more. So to reach them, you really have to do these videos or posts or whatever to get the word out and trigger that nostalgia in them to be like, oh, like, let's go check out this store. They have GameCube stuff. They have Xbox 360.
If you guys both want to feel really old, we have people that come in right now to get Wii and they're like, oh, my childhood console. You're like, no, wait, how old are you? And they'll just be like, oh man, I'm 22 and I played this a lot when I was a kid and now I have expendable income. And I'm like, oh boy. They're like,
you're
oh, that's
a baby.
That was my jam when I was a kid. And I was like, oh boy.
If you're still a kid, so bro.
You're like, do you know what plays GameCube games? And they're like, what the heck is GameCube?
Yeah, what is that? That part's actually really funny. I love that. But I was talking to somebody recently where assuming Xbox doesn't completely foobar their presence in the console space. If we move to physical media dying, I think our stores are actually going to grow in popularity, if that makes sense. People will have a longing for that physical media if it's not available, or we will start to have relationship with indie distributors. So if you think having like 20 to 30 different limited run slash options now is a problem. There will be 200 when physical media is not being produced by the big first party distributors. It will be a bunch of smaller ones distributing stuff and everything will be like $20 to $30 more expensive. So, but then you'll start to divide the people that love physical and the ones that don't. So it'll be
I'm already trying to build Colin's Switch collection. So that way when he's like my age, he's like, oh,
Switch cartridges. I actually have it, Dad.
They still taste bad.
That's hilarious.
It's so bitter.
I still don't want to swallow it.
I'll tell you like I said, I'm off Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays, and I have my daughter with me all day. So I'm watching her and I'm trying to get content done and this and that. So I try to keep her out of the game room, but sometimes I'll let her come in here and fart around and she'll constantly grab whatever it is and right in the mouth, everything in the mouth. Like, and she's constantly opening up. I have a little bin on the floor of like trade bait games I want to get rid of. And she keeps like opening them up and she hasn't bitten on any of those yet, but I'm like, oh God.
I would come in. Cammy was 2 years old and my entire PS2 collection was de-disced and on the ground when I came into my collection, dude. And that happened a lot when she was little. So like, there's no good way. Like if you're making them a sandwich and they run away for just a second, they're always getting into something.
My kids are scared of my game room.
Oh yeah. I don't know. You like
it's in a closet.
Yeah. They're like,
they're scared of the goblins that live in these doors.
Perfect.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's the what are they called? Moblin? What are they called?
Moblins?
No, the little hand puppets.
Oh yeah, the old toys.
Moblins.
Yeah, goblins.
That's not moblins. It's something else. Moblins are from
B, with a B, right? Bob
Boglins. Boglins. Yeah. I think they're scared about Boglins or something. But they're like, they never want to be around this part of our bedroom at night. And I'm like, they're like, what are you? I'm like, what are you scared of? They're like, your closet. I'm like, it's full of toys. Like, what are you?
Yeah. Have you seen Toy Story, Jay? They come alive, bro.
Like, I hang out in here by myself and late hours of the night playing Nintendo. Like, it's safe. I promise.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Nice. Well, I think this is a pretty good episode. I'm glad to have you on, Andy. Chat about video games, and hopefully I'll be able to come out sometime and check out the store in person. I've never been there. I've been to South Carolina twice and we never went there.
That's right. Yeah, because you are you doing Siege this year or no?
Not this year. I'm hoping for next year.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, Russ, you're always welcome at the store. Jay, you're not. You can't come anymore.
Fine. Fair enough.
But yeah, do come see us, and I appreciate you guys having me on the show.
No, it was great. I loved it.
Yeah. Good times for sure.
Awesome.
If you want to check out Andy's stuff, we got Pac-Man Case on YouTube. I'll share the screen again, but what was your last video you put out?
I want to say it was Xbox, like OG Xbox. Yeah, Hidden Gems. But then a lot of the current stuff I've been working on is the Video Game Cavern. We're trying to build that channel right now. So,
I didn't even know. Yeah. Maybe I'm not subscribed yet.
So we've got the Video Game Cavern channel. We're doing shorts on that. And then we're also doing Instagram and TikTok as well. So that's growing slow.
Yep. There we go. Subscribe.
Boom. Thanks. Appreciate you. So that'll kind of also give you, I do an episode every week called What's in the Case, which kind of gives our customers an update on the cool stuff in the store. And to be honest, go watch one of the last ones and you might see someone you recognize.
How about that?
That's right.
Sweet.
Yep. Well, yep. Love it, guys.
Appreciate it. Let's see. We'll do our outros. What do we got? We got new episodes every Wednesday and Saturday. You can catch out Warpipe Wednesday on Wednesdays, obviously, and then our new episodes every Saturday at 7 a.m. Oh, I'm mumbling up here. I've been streaming for basically 4 hours, so
it's been a lot.
Check out the weeklywarpipe.com. It has all our episodes on there. Merch. You can pick up Cub. Which way? Oh, you're pointing this way. Pick up your mugs, buttons, pins, hats, and all that jazz over there. And a quick shout out to our Patreons. We got Dan and Nicole's Treasures Untold, Joe Sheevy, Trace Livingood, Samantha Chang, Rodney Torres, Retroholic 16, and Austin Mills.
Nice.
Supporting the show. And yeah, that's about it, guys. Appreciate you listening, watching us here on YouTube. If you are, be sure to like and subscribe and all that jazz. And we'll see you on the next episode.